नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम
नमः भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 12 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द परफेक्ट सोसाइटी फोर स्पिरिचुअल क्लासेस
खानि वायौ निश्वासांस तेजसुष्माणमात्मवान् अप्स्वसृक्श्लेष्मपूयानि क्षितौक्षेशमयथोद्भवम्
ट्रांसलेशन A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by the fire, and semen, blood, and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle, and bone are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. To be self-realized, one must understand the original sources of the various elements of the body. The body is a combination of skin, bone, muscle, blood, semen, urine, stool, heat, breath, and so on, which all come from earth, water, fire, air, and sky. One must be well conversant with the sources of all the bodily constituents. Then one becomes a self-realized person or Atmavan, one who knows the self. The next three verses have no purports, so I'll just go through the translation and that will end this chapter. Thereafter, the objects of speech, along with the sense of speech, the tongue, should be bestowed upon fire. Craftsmanship and the two hands should be given to the demigod Indra. The power of movement and the legs should be given to Lord Vishnu. Sensual pleasure, along with the genitals, should be bestowed upon Prajapati. The rectum with the power of evacuation should be bestowed in its proper place unto Mrityu. The oral instrument, along with sound vibration, should be given to the deities presiding over the directions. The instrument of touch, along with the sense objects of touch, should be given to Vayu. Form, with the power of sight, should be bestowed upon the sun. The tongue, along with the demigod Varuna, should be bestowed upon water. And the power of smell, along with the two Ashwini Kumar demigods, should be bestowed upon the earth. The mind, along with all the material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with the intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. False ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature and which induces one to think, I am this body and everything connected with this body is mine, should be merged along with material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness, along with the goal of thought, should be merged in the individual living being. And the demigods acting under the modes of material nature should be merged along with the perverted living being into the supreme being. The earth should be merged in water, water in the brightness of the sun, this brightness into the air into the sky into the false ego into the total material energy, the total material energy into the unmanifested ingredients, the pradhan feature of the material energy, and at last, the ingredient feature of material manifestation into the super soul. When all material designations have thus merged into their respective material elements, the living beings who are all ultimately completely spiritual, being one in quality with the Supreme Being, should cease from material existence as flames cease when the wood in which they are burning is consumed. When the material body is returned to its various material elements, only the spiritual being remains. This spiritual being is Brahman and is equal in quality with Parabrahman. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Perfect Society for Spiritual Classes. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaudadaya Pushpavanto Chitra Shandauta Monito Ugrapyanugraye Vayam Subhaktanam Nirkeshri Keshri Vasapotanam Anyeshamukra Vikramaha. So, in this verse, in this particular chapter, the final stages in the life of a living entity who has taken to the Vanaprast ashram is being described. And the process of yoga, mystic yoga, ultimately culminating in identifying oneself as spirit soul, eternal part and parcel of Krishna, is being described step by step. And it is very interesting that although this process is of merging everything into something superior, there are always personalities who are existent. For example, it is said that the intelligence must be merged into Rudra along with all the false ego, along with all the conceptions must be merged into Rudra. The deity of false ego, presiding deity of false ego. So the whole idea is that we have received the living entity, the pure spirit soul, has received ingredients to function in this material world. To achieve a particular goal or a laksha, destination. And once having done that, one gives back those ingredients to the persons to whom they belong. One offers them back. So in one particular universe, one living entity does like this. And all the living entities in all the universes, not all, but those living entities who are on this path, they offer to their respective in charges in each particular universe. Then there is a sum total of the Pradhan, which accepts from each universe these ingredients. So within the Pradhan, the ingredients which are available, the total manifestation that is available, each of them again has a predominating personality. The sum total of all the false ego has Sankarshan as the predominating personality. The sum total of all intelligence has Pradyumna as the predominating personality. The sum total of all the mind has Aniruddha as the predominating personality. And the sum total of all consciousness is Vasudev as the predominating personality. So as one progresses from the microcosm to the macrocosm, the whole journey reveals one or makes one aware of personality is more powerful and more superior to one. This process is very useful because then it helps a living entity in giving up the designations easily. One of the ways is designations are acquired because of certain facilities or certain resources that we have. A person who has wealth, he feels that he has a designation of being rich. Someone who has beauty, they feel that they are very beautiful. They get various designations. So when the living entity on the path of self-realization voluntarily and through the practice of mystic yoga process offers all these ingredients back, one can see that the designations go along with these ingredients. But unless and until one offers one's consciousness unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, the initial designation that one carries, being separate from Krishna consciously, that conscious decision that one has taken, unless until that is given up, the cycle of birth and death does not stop. Therefore, the offering of consciousness is very important unto the Supreme Lord Vasudev. One has to merge the consciousness of I into the consciousness of being part and parcel of Krishna. Becoming one with the idea that I am Krishna's servant or the eternal living being meant to serve the Supreme Living Being. That is merging one's consciousness unto, because ultimately the living entity finds oneself through this process slowly but surely. It's a very tedious process. At the end, one is left with no option but to say, my dear Lord, my consciousness I offer unto you. Till then, one is offering consciously all the material ingredients. And the designation of I am offering still remains. That is why this people who practice the process of Sankhya or this mystic yoga process of yoga, the danger for them is that if they do not take that ultimate step of Adrita Yashmad Angraya, if they do not give that respect, they do not take the shelter of that Adrita, they become Anadrita. Of the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, the danger is again accepting designations. And this is simply because a living entity has got the nature of being tatastha or marginal. Somehow or the other, we have to accept this fact and live with it that we are marginal. The soul is marginal. And marginal means one has to take the designation of either being the servant of Vishnu or one has to take on material designations, which Prabhupada says as servant of Maya. He gives this wonderful, under that all designations come in this material world. So just because that is the very nature of the living entity, one cannot survive without designations. The mystic yoga process means giving up designations. Ultimately, it has to culminate in accepting the Supreme Lord as one's master and the designation of being I am the servant. That is one's constitutional position. The process is very tedious, but it culminates in that. And those who do not accept it, those who want to maintain their consciousness separately, despite the fact that they have merged everything into the pradhan and nothing remains of these material designations, except the consciousness that I am separate from Krishna still. That has been not offered to Krishna. Aruhiya Krishna, with lot of efforts, they have gone up. Aruhiya. They have progressed up, 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 up. They have merged this earth, this body and the bones and the muscles, they have merged into the earth element. They have merged that earth element into the sun element. They have merged the sun or the fire element into the air element. Slowly and surely, the senses are being annihilated along with the sense objects. Because as soon as the earth element goes, along with that, the object of smell goes. There's no longer the sense of smell. Similarly, as soon as the air element is merged into the higher element of sound, then the sense of touch goes. Immediately it goes. Just by merging that. And what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? All problems in this world is because of interaction of the senses with the sense objects. So that is why this mystic yoga process is practiced, to remove those interactions between the senses and the sense objects. The Vishaya Taranga is finished. However, having gone so much up and up and up, if one does not take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, one does not respect the lotus feet of Krishna, one has no other, one has no respect, one does not say, "My dear sir, I accept your shelter," then parampadam tata patante adha. They have reached this parampad in this material universe. They have reached the topmost destination. But they have not got sufficient credits to go beyond the material universe, and hence they fall back. This is the mystic yoga process. So not only is there a danger at every step in this material world, but practicing the mystic yoga process and the process of tedious sense control without the underlying platform of I am Krishna's servant, if that platform is not there, ultimately through this process, everything else goes except the platform that I have to become Krishna's servant. And when the living entity cannot see that, when the living entity cannot accept it, everything else, all the sense control, all the process of merging, all the process of controlling their mind and giving up their ego is ultimately nullified, or it is useless. So what is the benefit of practicing strict sense control if one has not developed affection and faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And if one has developed faith and affection in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why should one practice the tedious process? Because the ultimate goal is to develop that faith. And therefore, Naradiya Puran, I think, or somewhere it is mentioned in one of the scriptures, that if one is worshipping Lord Hari, tapasa tatha kim, what is the necessity of doing all of these activities that the mystic yogis do? And if one is not worshipping Lord Hari, then what is the benefit of doing all of those activities? Aradhyate jadi hari tapasa tatha kim. Na aradhyate jadi hari tapasa tatha kim. Antar bahir jadi hari tapasa tatha kim. So, the definition of bhakti is very clear. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. When one has given up all other designations and simply is engaged in serving Lord Rishikesh, who is the master of the senses. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. Once in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada was talking, he was in the morning sitting, and some great pandits came to visit him. Those who are knowledgeable in the Vedic literatures, those who are mystic yogis, or they were well-versed in Sankhya, they came and they were discussing with Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan was well-respected by many. And it is a nature that in spiritual places, or especially in spiritual circles, sadhus always come together. Whatever path they may be following, they respect each other's spiritual consciousness and they want to get benefit. So they come to associate. So all this great personalities had come to meet Srila Prabhupada, and they discussed a few things. And they said, Swamiji, all the Vedic literatures mention so many things differently. Therefore, sometimes becomes very difficult to understand who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada said, so, you do not know who the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He said, no, Swamiji, It is not very clear after all the Vedic studies and all the practices. It's not very clear. So Prabhupada said, oh, you are great Chaturvedi, Trivedi, and you do not know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So some of the Gurukul boys, yeah, 5-6 years, they had got the free time and they knew Prabhupada was there. So they liked to be around Prabhupada. And one of the reasons why they liked to be around Prabhupada was that Prabhupada, as a grandfatherly figure, he was quite aged, in his 70s. So as a grandfatherly figure, he would often call these young boys and say, so did you have anything you had? So they'd say yes or no. So whatever the answer would be, Prabhupada would have some sweets with him and definitely give them. And children like that. Whether devotees or non-devotees, all children like it. Devotee family, they like. And a grandfatherly figure generally does that. So this was a special relationship between the Gurukul children and Prabhupada. And they would make it a point to be around Prabhupada whenever they saw that there was something kept. So this morning they saw there was a big jar of gulab jamuns kept there. And they could see those big gulab jamuns. So they were just waiting on the periphery of Prabhupada's vision. So Prabhupada says, so you do not know? He called some of the Gurukul boys. He said, come here. And he asked them, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Sometimes, yes, grandfatherly figures always ask questions like this. Beta, please tell us. And the boy knows that if he gives a good answer, he'll get shabashi, right? He'll get some blessings, good words, and also something special, some sweet. So, 2-3 boys would say, they said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said, see. And took gulab jamun and put it in their hands. One each. So they were very happy. But children, when it comes to simple affairs, they're very intelligent. Children knew that there is something more to come. So they did not run away. They just waited there. One of the reasons was that they had gulab jamun only in one hand. The other hand was still empty. So Prabhupada looked at them and he said, so who is Krishna? And he said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God at Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, Hari Bol, and he gave them another. Now two, the children are intelligent. They know if we want, atyahar should not be done. I have two hands, two gulab jamuns full. If I want more, it will be atyahar. Either it will fall down or they will take everything away. So before something like that happens, they ran away. They all vanished. And Prabhupada turned to all of these pandits and said, see, even the children know. And you big, big pandits do not know. They said, no, Swamiji, we understand. But still there are so many names, Krishna and this and that, and there are different personalities. So how do we know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How do we know it for sure? And ultimately, Prabhupada just looked at them and said, even Krishna does not know that. So here, it does not mean that Krishna is unaware, but Prabhupada is revealing a very, very deep understanding that Krishna's potency every moment goes on increasing. And there's a reference from the CC, Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Kaviraj Goswami describes a pastime in Dwarka when Krishna is going around the palace and suddenly in one of the jeweled pillars, he sees a reflection of a beautiful, beautiful person. The complexion of a freshly formed monsoon cloud with lotus-petaled eyes and red lips like the bimba fruit and a peacock feather in his hair. And he looks at it and he says, who is this beautiful person? And Krishna starts looking behind him. Is there someone behind me who's so beautiful? So when Krishna does not know how he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in other words, his potency is eternally increasing. So, the concept of giving up the upadhi and engaging one's senses in Krishna's service means that there is an always increased availability of service. There is an increased availability of getting pleasure eternally. It is not a static process. The process of devotional service is dynamic. There is always facility available, even in the spiritual realm, to increase one's service unto Krishna. And neither Krishna nor the living entity knows at that moment what that increase will be. It depends directly, it is directly proportional to the desire of the living entity to serve Krishna and Krishna's pleasure based on the living entity's service. This reciprocal relationship brings about increasing and increasing love and affection in the spiritual world. Therefore, here the word Atmavan, which means a self-realized person, in the Bhagavad Gita also, and Prabhupada explains, one becomes self-realized person or Atmavan who knows his self. Krishna, in the beginning itself, stresses to Arjuna to become Atmavan. And the only way to become Atmavan is to give up trying to understand through the process of minute study and minute observation what this material universe consists of and how we are interacting with it. This is a trap. This analytical understanding or analytical process of trying to render spiritual activities is a big trap of Maya. And the problem is, it is mental. How do we do this like this so that it happens like that and ultimately based on this clause, we get that goal? The present time and place and circumstance will allow us to question in this way or will ask, make us doubt in this way or try make us try to understand in one particular way. The next moment it changes because in this material world, everything is constantly changing. So Krishna tells Arjuna, you have to go above these material modes. And going above the material modes means there has to be change and doubt. You try to control your senses and your mind in one particular way this moment. The next moment, the senses and the mind do not remain the same situation. Srila Prabhupada, there was another instance. When he told the devotees that one should eat just enough to be well situated healthily and practice Krishna consciousness. And the devotees, they asked Prabhupada that in the beginning years of Krishna consciousness, you told us that you should fill yourself with prasad till the neck. So Prabhupada said, yes, at that time I gave an instruction and you followed. Why are you not following an instruction now? So this is the nature of this material modes. Circumstances will always change, and along with that, one's conception of how one is practicing the spiritual path is always in doubt. I am like this in this situation. A disciple may approach a spiritual master with this. I am in this situation like this. Guru Maharaj, please give me a solution to that. And as soon as he takes a solution and practices it, the next moment he comes back with another inquiry. Now I am in another situation and please, oh my spiritual master, help me with this. So unless and until one actually goes nirdvandva, or goes above the modes, and do what? Nitya sattvastha. And what is this sattvastha? Srila Prabhupada in that purport to the Bhagavad Gita, this verse, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunivarsha, he says, one must practice spiritual life. I'm paraphrasing it. The exact words I do not remember except some wordings which are very important. In full Krishna consciousness, depending on the goodwill of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the goodwill of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One cannot come back and say, why didn't you give me the entire process when I came to you in previous time, my dear spiritual master, O Krishna? When I came the last time, you should have told me that this problem will come up next. Krishna already says the problem will come up next. Our conception of how we are going to resolve our own crisis in devotional life will always be there. Those doubts will always remain. It will remain till the time we have a material body and a material mind and material senses. Those doubts will always remain. How to do this better? How to do that better? The only thing that will help us to be free from these doubts is to become, to practice such that we are in full Krishna consciousness, depending on the goodwill of Krishna. Not just being full Krishna conscious, but there has to be dependence on the goodwill of Krishna, which is most important. That goodwill of Krishna should be there. So that sevanam, or here when nitya sattvastha, that nitya sattvastha means dependence on the goodwill of Krishna. Nitya sattvastha cannot mean anything else. And to be dependent on the goodwill of Krishna, the next point is niryoga kshema. One has to give up dependence on yoga and kshema. Yoga means trying to gather things to be well situated, and kshema means trying to protect them. One has to give up the conception of gains and preservation. The conception has to be given up. That desire has to be given up. As soon as one has a desire to gain something, that very desire is the root cause of loss and misery. Because that desire is born at a particular point of time, it will go. Jatasya hi dhruvam janma mrutasya cha. For one that has a birth, death is certain. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says that the concept of happiness in this material world is simply in the conception. Because as soon as one thinks of happiness, one is actually conceptualizing one's misery. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga offers us a very simple and straight path. Just by serving Krishna, Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam, and to make it more, put more emphasis on it, that Sevanam has been emphasized by Anya Bhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmanad or Nirdandvastha Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Become that self-realized soul, O Arjun. One who is situated in the eternal self. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the concept, the pastime of Lord Chaitanya's taking sannyas is explained. And then, by the arrangement of Nityanand Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya is brought to Shantipur. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan. Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that Nityanand Prabhu tricked him to come to Shantipur. The house of Advaita Acharya. And he told Chandrasekhar Acharya, the uncle of Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that please go to Nabadweep and inform Mother Sachi and other devotees who are in the lamentation of separation, bring them to Shantipur. So when Mahaprabhu reaches the house of Advaita Acharya that night, first of all he's shocked. He says, what are you doing in Vrindavan? I went, but how come you also came to Vrindavan? So Advaita Acharya says, no, this is Shantipur. So this is also very interesting. Because after taking sannyas, a sannyasi is not supposed to go back. So Nityananda Prabhu is so very particular to see that no one ever blames Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for breaking any principles. He does not take him to Navadvip, he takes him to Shantipur. He could have taken, Nityananda Prabhu swam all the way from along the Ganga to Navadvip to meet Mother Sachi from Katwa. Chaitanya Bhagavata explains that. But Mahaprabhu, he brought him to Shantipur and asked all the devotees to come to Shantipur. And it is, since here something about the body and merging is given, how one must realize to whom the body and all the elements belong, ultimately the source of everything. So this particular pastime I remembered in this connection. Mother Sachi comes the next day in a palki, in a palanquin. Nityanand Prabhu brings her along with the other devotees from Navadvip. And then Lord Chaitanya sees her. Lord Chaitanya is already in ecstasy of love of Godhead. He is constantly crying and horripilation is there all over his body. He is not aware of his surroundings. Mother Sachi, when she arrives, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he offers obeisances, full dandavats at a lotus feet. Now please understand the situation of Mother Sachi. She has heard her son has left her. Somehow or the other he has tricked her into giving blessings. That pain is still there, that I gave him blessings. How can a mother ever give blessings to a son to take sannyas? Especially if the son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she's having that pain. Then the pain that he actually has left. Then there's a pain of seeing all the devotees. Mother Sachi is the mother of the whole universe. She sees all the devotees in lamentation. And then she gets a painful news that actually he has accepted sannyas and shaven off his head. Now for a mother, especially at times when people, children or men would have slightly long hair, even when they grow up, the way of showing, one of the very prominent ways of showing affection to their sons is, whatever may be the age of the son or the mother is, they like to oil their hair and give them a massage. Mother Sachi would do it every day. She practically knew how many hairs there were on the head of Lord Chaitanya. She would affectionately oil and comb his hair every day. And then she heard that. And Mother Sachi would always offer oil and would do massage of the head. The reason being that the hair should be more. There should be more growth, luxuriant growth. So now she, you know, I did all of that and the hairs are all gone. Shaven off. He's shaven off his head. He's become a sannyasi. All of these pains were constantly erupting like a volcano within her heart. And then she sees her son. Now she's seen her son in love of Godhead in Navadvip. And that would often give her a lot of distress. Because sometimes Mahaprabhu would not be aware of his external situation. He'd jump high in the air and suddenly he'd let loose. He'd forget that he was in the air. But then, not disobeying the laws of gravity, the body would fall down. Lord Chaitanya's transcendental body, Mother Earth would embrace it again. However, Mother Sachi would see that as a crashing. The body crashing against, with all its bones crashing against the earth. And this would break her heart. She could never understand why her son is constantly crying so much. You know, sometimes mothers tell the children, don't cry so much or your eyes will fall out. Don't rub your eyes so much, it will fall out. That is what Mother Sachi would be thinking. His eyes, he'll get some disease. His eyes, he'll go blind from crying. She has seen all of that. But in Katwa, after taking sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling the fulfillment of his goal. That now I will go to Vrindavan and simply meet Krishna. Constantly be there in the land of Vrindavan. So that ecstasy of going to Vrindavan multiplied his original state millions and millions of times. So when Mother Sachi comes to Shantipur and sees those manifestations multiplied millions and millions of times, her heart ceases to exist in one sense. It no longer can be cracked in anymore. At the same time, after 4 days or 5 days, she's seeing her son for the first time, and that is that love, that affection, that sight of seeing her son is giving her life. Her heart rejuvenates. So this clash of emotions, of joy of seeing her son, and the intense distress is agitating her consciousness, and therefore she is also not aware of what is happening. She cannot properly respond. So when Lord Chaitanya is offering her his obeisances there, Mother Sachi simply stands there, dumbstruck like a stone, tears cascading down her face. And then the emotion, where these two emotions are, the emotion of seeing her son and the emotion of of being separated from her, because the sambhoga, that coming together, becomes more powerful, the love for a son immediately manifests and it overtakes her entire consciousness. It consumes her, and she bends down and lifts up her son and embraces him. She starts caressing his body as a mother does, wiping off the dust that has accumulated on his body because he has offered dandavats to her. Looking at every single feature of his personality, his face, his eyes, his ears, his nose, his mouth, observing it very minutely, kissing him repeatedly on his forehead, embracing him, taking him on his lap, constantly in this way trying to shower her affection onto her son. And then she sees his shaved head, and that registers in her brain, and that simply breaks her heart once again. He's taken sannyas. There's no coming back. And she starts crying piteously. And all these tears are washing the body of Lord Chaitanya. What did you do, my son? What did you do? The question is there on her face. She says, my dear son, please don't do what Vishwarup did, your elder brother. Chaitanya Bhagavat explains that she says, Vishwarup took sannyas and left away, left home, never to come back. I am your mother. I cannot ask you to give up your sannyas. What will people say? I can tolerate you being a sannyasi, but I cannot tolerate when people say that you have given up your sannyas vows and come back home. That will be a bigger misery for me, a greater distress for me. However, please stay at a place where I can see you, where I can hear about you. If I want, I can come and meet you. There's constant news of you. And there Lord Chaitanya says, my dear mother, I do not know what I did. Out of some weirdness, I just ran away and I shaved off my head. This body you have nourished, you have personally, with your own love and affection that you have showered on this body, this body is totally yours. And I, such a fool, I went on and thought this is my body and I can do with it whatever I want. Therefore, my dear mother, I assure you, whatever is your desire, wherever you want me to stay, I will stay. And then another pastime starts in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita also another pastime starts. So this pastime, compared to what we are speaking, is very, very illustrating in the sense that ultimately Krishna is the source. But in the Gaudiya Vaishnava theology, we have another understanding. Everything belongs to Krishna. Therefore, he is called Madan Mohan. But Krishna belongs to Srimati Radharani. Therefore, she is called Madan Mohan Mohini. And who is Sri Radhika? Srimati Radharani is the devotee of Krishna. So in the Gaudiya Vaishnava theology, Atmavan means offering oneself completely at the service of the devotees of the Lord who have dedicated themselves to the service of Krishna. The Gaudiya Vaishnava theology does not believe, or it does not stop rather. The Gaudiya Vaishnava theology does not stop at only service of Krishna. The Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy goes beyond that. It's service of the devotees of Krishna. And this service to the devotees of Krishna pleases Krishna more than anything else. Because Krishna feels that his existence is simply because of the existence of devotees. One South Indian saint and poet has mentioned that, Krishna, what is your glory? In a moment of intense separation from Krishna and feeling that, what is Krishna doing? Sometimes devotees get that mood. What is Krishna doing? Why is he so lazy? Why doesn't he come and remove my unhappiness? In higher stages, not in the neophyte stage. They feel that intense separation, that where is Krishna? Krishna, kota hai? Kota hai Krishna? Kota hai Krishna? Why isn't he coming? Is he at a Govardhan? Is he at Bamsiwat? Where is he?
So that kotha hai, where is Krishna manifests, why is Krishna not coming? So one of the devotees, he starts chastising Krishna in that mood and he says, what is your glory? And there are various ways he explains that. Krishna's glory is not his glory, but it is dependent on something. And he says, your glory is only because your devotees are there. That is why people know how great you are, because devotees are there. That is why people know how great your devotional service is, because devotees do that. What do you do? You are bereft of practicing devotional service. You cannot do that. And therefore, Krishna, you are not a devotee. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna says, oh, therefore I have to become a devotee. I have to come as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So your glory is simply because of your devotees. So this concept of trying to serve the devotees of the Lord who are engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is a very, very direct, practical, understandable, and sublime process. To please the devotees of the Lord is to please to the heart of Krishna. So giving up all these other conceptions of whether to do like this or like that, sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Yes. So one must take shelter of Krishna, but the Bhagavatam explains that taking shelter of Krishna, if you go and try to take shelter of Krishna, you won't find Krishna where you think Krishna is. Even Krishna does not know that he is not where he has told he is there, because he always resides in the heart of the devotee. Wherever the devotees come together and serve him through the chanting of the holy names, that is where Krishna is. Not in Vaikuntha, not in the heart of the yogis, but wherever devotees come together and constantly chant and chant his holy names and remember him. So sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja means taking shelter of the association of devotees. And the only question that will help us in that association is, how can we serve more? Not how can we control our senses? How can we develop more? All this is necessary, but it has to be on the platform of, it has to be with the underlying current of how to serve the devotees of the Lord, how to serve Krishna. So that is manifested, that is also very practically understood through the life of Ishwarapuri, whose disappearance date is today. Ishwarapuri, explained in by Srila Prabhupada and other acharyas, is he got the great fortune of being the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he served Madhavendra Puri Maharaj in such a way that Madhavendra Puri Maharaj became pleased with him. And another disciple by the name of Ramchandra Puri, although he was also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, his association with Madhavendra Puri, ultimately his association, not the other way around, but the way he associated with the spiritual master or with the devotee of the Lord, ultimately resulted in material desires sprouting within his heart and leading to criticism of the devotees. Because he thought that he could teach his spiritual master, or he was greater than his spiritual master. And when one thinks that one is greater, then service cannot be done. So Ramchandra Puri lost that opportunity by his own independent act of trying to teach his spiritual master, give him instructions, thinking that his spiritual master needs instructions, thinking that a great devotee of the Lord needs instructions. And Ishwarapuri did not do that. He served his spiritual master. And just by serving his spiritual master, he got the great fortune of being the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is the glory of serving the great devotees of the Lord. The Supreme Lord becomes subservient to such devotees. He accepts them as his own master. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki Shri Prabhupada ki Gaur Premanande.